edition of With All Due Respect. Strong opinions on politics, life, and entertainment.
Politics, life, entertainment. Politics, life, entertainment.
Welcome to another edition of With All Due Respect, the podcast that believes if we explain how the magic trick works, you won't fall for it anymore. Greetings, everyone. I am your host, Andrew Howcrow, for this Patty Naughty of a podcast. With me, as always, is my main man, my chief collaborator, my go-to, who knows to, Mr. Van Sanders. Mr. Sanders, how are you this episode?
You know, I'm hanging in there and doing the best I can. This year has been a lesson in humility. But what was that about Patty Naughty?
Yes, I feel we are a Patty Naughty of a podcast. And Van, since not all of our listeners are fluent in Yorkshire, maybe you could help us out with a definition of the word Patty Naughty.
Okay. I have the definition here, thanks to you. It says, Patty Naughty is an old Yorkshire dialect word for a lengthy and long-winded story that goes nowhere and might not even be true.
Well, I would say our podcast might be lengthy and might be long-winded, but our stories always go somewhere. Yo, can I get a shout-out from the congregation? All right, ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for that. It seems one of our congregants has been dipping into the horse dewormer. As always, I'd like to thank the Anchorage Daily News for hosting this podcast on their platform and remind listeners that the very strong opinions you hear on this podcast are mine and mine alone, and in no way, shape, or form represent the opinions of the Anchorage Daily News or their employees. Today on With All Due Respect, you get a triple dose of podcast goodness. In politics, first we're going to talk about Mayor Dave Bronson's appointments during his first 60 days on the job, and we're going to discuss how his friends and family plan for employment at City Hall is the talk of the town. For our bonus political segment, in negotiations there are always two cards you can play, the X card and the Y card. I analyze why both Governor Dunleavy and Mayor Bronson's reliance on the X card is going to backfire because the Delta variant don't negotiate. In our live segment today, with Labor Day fast approaching, I ask our podcast fashionista, Maya Nolan Partnow, to help me answer the eternal fashion quandary. Should you be wearing white after Labor Day? In entertainment, I offer you a must-see documentary on the QAnon movement. Spoiler alert, if millions of Americans can be influenced by two weird dudes on the internet, we should all be worried. And finally, in closing comments, we have spent the last two episodes outlining how Governor Dunleavy's growth projections for the economy have been over-exaggerated and simply will not cover the billions in deficits his PFD plan will create. To make our point, we're going to share with you a revenue fact you should know. While the NPRA is officially called the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska, for purposes of revenue to Alaska State Treasury, it should be called not Prudhoe Revenue at all. When we talk about those big fines in NPRA, we need to remember that's federal land, and the state's eventual revenue take will be pennies on the dollar. A full episode ahead, so let's get started by talking some politics.
Politics. And now, for some politics.
In local politics, we look to the past to see the future. 5 months ago on this podcast, we told you that Mayor Bronson's initial appointments would tip his hand on how he would govern the city of Anchorage. On episode 5, we wondered out loud, since Bronson won by less than 1,300 votes, if he would govern more toward the middle or if he would continue to pull hard right. Ladies and gentlemen, the thud you heard was the city of Anchorage sliding into a deep ditch on the far right-hand side of the road. Let's take a look at the roster so far of Bronson's appointees. First, let's start with the homeless coordinator. Mayor named Dr. John Morris, an anesthesiologist who just recently arrived to our fair city and who was wholly without qualifications. Morris's appointment was controversial simply because of his lack of experience, his lack of any qualifications on having to do with homeless issues. And Morris didn't disappoint. His initial answer was a $15 million shelter that was rushed in design and quickly became a $22 million plus shelter when they discovered they forgot bathrooms. And oh, by the way, there was no money left for housing and transition service. The proposal was so poorly designed, it was even dismissed by the two conservative members on the assembly, who both voted to reject the proposal. Then Morris went out and hired a controversial consultant, Robert Marbutt Jr., under the guise of answering questions, when in fact he was hired just simply to pimp the mayor's mega shelter proposal. Now, let's turn our focus to the mayor's public health director. Mayor Bronson appointed Dr. Dave Morgan. Morgan was a former chairman for the Alaska Republican Party, a longtime conservative activist, and a retired healthcare manager. Morgan's appointment was controversial as well. He made several charged social media posts over the course of the pandemic that downplayed the seriousness of COVID-19 and even questioned the safety of vaccines. During an interview, he stated he wasn't sure it was a pandemic. During his assembly vetting, he called COVID Corvid and Dr. Zink Dr. Zinkle. Morgan graciously resigned after it was clear he was wholly unqualified and he would not have the necessary votes needed to be approved. So that's 0-2. Okay, seriously, how hard is this one? How hard is it to avoid controversy in appointing the head librarian? Normally, just like the public health director, appointment of the head librarian is traditionally non-controversial. But Bronson supporters and conservative groups have been cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs at the prospect of a conservative librarian. These folks have held a disdainful eye on the public library, wanting to bring an end to Drag Queen Story Hour and absolve the public library system of any book that even remotely associated with critical race theory. So we now know why this appears to be a political hill Bronson is willing to die fighting on. So first he nominates Sammy Graham. She didn't even meet minimum qualifications that were posted by the Bronson administration themselves. She was rejected by the assembly in a 7-4 vote. Then immediately after her appointment failed, Bronson stood in dramatic fashion, almost Shakespearean-like, to tell the assembly that he was appointing Graham as his chief of staff effective immediately. In fact, so immediately, she immediately took the dais at the seat where the chief of staff normally sits. And then Bronson told the assembly if they wanted to find Graham's office, it would be in the library. Side note here, the role of the chief of staff, and by role, I mean R-O-L-E, not R-O-L-L, the role of the chief of staff is to manage day-to-day administrative operations of the mayor's office. In fact, the chief of staff and the mayor work so close together, they have offices with adjoining interior doors. The chief of staff is traditionally the mayor's gatekeeper for the staff. They provide the mayor's inside voice and sometimes disciplinarian. The chief of staff manages the day-to-day operations of the staff. Their presence on site is critical. So why would Bronson's chief of staff be located almost 3 miles from where her staff is located? I mean, ladies and gentlemen, imagine if the chief of police wasn't at APD headquarters, but his office was at the municipal greenhouse. I mean, it's basically the same thing. Okay, let's set that aside. A few days later, after Graham was named the chief of staff, the Bronson administration issued a news release announcing their nominee to replace Graham, who was now, of course, as we said, the chief of staff. Then, just minutes after the press release went out, Craig Campbell sent out an internal email asking, quote, Sammy be included in these types of releases. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I must be on some old secret City Hall mailing list because that email was not intended for me, but I got it, and it raised some real red flags. So why was the chief of staff, whose responsibility it is to give final approval over these types of releases before they are sent out, not even copied? Why was the chief of staff not copied on something that had specifically to do with her staff? Ladies and gentlemen, there is no transparency in this administration. None. And as I said 2 episodes ago, patterns of behavior. So, with Graham voted down after not even meeting the minimum qualifications the Bronson administration advertised themselves, you would expect the mayor should pick someone more qualified, or maybe even someone at least who met the minimum requirements, right? No. Mayor Bronson announced that Judy Elitch would be his replacement for Graham. Elitch, a longtime conservative Republican Party activist, is even less qualified than Graham. So instead of proposing someone more qualified, the mayor proposed someone less qualified and twice as controversial. Elitch, a well-known partisan activist, hosts a Facebook account under her name that linked gay and transgender people to pedophilia, and one of my favorites was she was pictured with her and her husband aboard an airplane during the pandemic last year without masks. On her social media page, the sure contender for Librarian of the Year posted, wait a minute, no, let's do this right. Van, can you give me a little background, a little soft music?
Sure.
And now, a social media post from Anchorage's next head librarian. Gotta love those baby boomers. Most of us at the airport with masks hanging down our faces, we look at each other, laugh, and say, this is a crock of shit. Yeah, we obviously raised some pussies. Maybe it was the ones our age wearing the mask that raised such wimps. Our kids would have gotten a good Tennessee ass whooping if they acted like wimps. Okay, first, wow. I mean, wowsy, wowsy, woo-woo. Second, tell me, Judy, do you kiss your grandkids with that mouth? I mean, wow. So, let's review the mayor's nominee to be the next head librarian. She called the pandemic a crock of shit. She called kids who wear masks pussies. She called their parents wimps. And finally, Elidge in this post appears to be advocating violence against children who wear masks. Related, ladies and gentlemen. During the year 2018, over 20,000 children visited the Anchorage libraries for just story time alone. Judy Elidge shouldn't be a librarian. In fact, Judy Elidge shouldn't be allowed around other people's children. She is not only unqualified to be a librarian, but she's a threat to society in general. Speaking of threats to society, Mayor Dave Bronson recently announced the appointment of two vocal critics of health mandates to the city's Public Health Advisory Board. Bronson recently nominated retired physician's assistant Jim Wojciechowski and the anesthesiologist Sean Degler. Since the beginning of the pandemic, Wojciechowski has called individual assembly members radicals, narcissists, and sycophants, and described assembly members' concerns over COVID-19 as, quote, panic porn. Degler, who just moved to Anchorage 2 years ago, like Wojciechowski, has also spoken against mask mandates and other pandemic response measures taken last year. So at a time when almost every hospital in this state is pleading, almost every healthcare worker in this state is begging, and Alaska's own chief medical officer is describing devastating Delta variant progression, Mayor Bronson appoints two people to the Public Health Advisory Board who have spent the last year advising the public to do exact opposite of what public health officials have been suggesting. And finally, to prove that his administration has the best friends and family plan in the market, this past week, Mayor Bronson announced the hiring of Dan Zappe to head the Muni's Solid Waste Services. With the hiring of Zappe, the mayor hired the father of his former campaign manager, Bernadette Wilson, to run the city's trash service, even though his former campaign manager, Bernadette Wilson, owns 75% of a competing trash service company that her father formerly owned as well. Of all the qualified people to run the solid waste services, he chose the father of his campaign manager, along with a thicket of conflict of interest potential. Ladies and gentlemen, 5 months ago, we told you Mayor Bronson's initial appointments would tip his hand on how he would govern. After less than 60 days in office, it has been a full deck of incompetence, unqualified nominees, blind partisanship, and favoritism. And by the way, where is Mayor Bronson's transition report? Under the last mayor, it was completed, printed, and publicly presented at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Make It Monday Forum just 3 weeks after he was sworn in. Bronson's been in office 60 days. So where in the world is his transition report? My friends, Mayor Bronson's first 60 days in office has been little more than a disappointment and division, while he surrounded himself with a staff that is a mixture of the unqualified and the partisan. After just 2 months in office, it's clear this could be a very long 3 years under Mayor Dave Bronson. In a unique politics segment, I'm going to take you through a different way to view the political interactions between Governor Dunleavy and the Alaska State Legislature, as well as Mayor Bronson and the Anchorage Assembly. Everything in politics is won or lost by playing a theoretical card game. In every situation, politicians like Governor Mike Dunleavy and Mayor Dave Bronson have two cards at their disposal, an X card and a Y card. Also in every situation, the governing bodies, in this case the legislature and the Anchorage Assembly, have those same two cards, X and Y. In negotiation, every move has both a substantive and a symbolic value. Playing the X card is more aggressive, a more challenging and competitive move. It's a move that says you've drawn the line. Playing the Y card is more safe and collaborative, a move that says you're genuinely interested in open negotiations. However, playing the Y card potentially puts you at risk of being vulnerable to be taken advantage by those who insist on playing the X card. In short, a Y player cannot play in a game against someone who only plays the X card. Years ago, I took a course on advanced negotiating, and on the first day, the professor told the following story. She had a good friend who was the superintendent of a local school district that was on the eve of entering into critical labor negotiations with the teacher union. He called her just before the negotiations were due to commence to tell her that he had informed his union counterpart that the district was not prepared to go beyond their original offer. The professor was stunned. "Why would you play the X card before negotiations have even begun?" she said. "Why would you play the X card as the first card out of your hand?" Her point was this: when you play the X card first, you leave your negotiating partner no choice but to do the same. If you're genuinely interested in reaching a compromise, you simply don't lead with the X card. Closer to home, it's clear that both Governor Dunleavy and Mayor Bronson that the X card is the only card they have in their hand. First, the governor on both the special session and the pandemic. Governor Dunleavy calls the legislature into special session when he knows he doesn't have the votes. X card. Governor Dunleavy demands the legislature create billions in budget deficits without providing solutions to balance the budget. X card. Governor Dunleavy sues over PCE instead of negotiating. X card. However, the most alarming X card that Governor Dunleavy is playing on Alaskans is with Alaskans' health. While the Delta variant is surging throughout Alaska, while the Delta variant is prompting emotional pleas in the press and on social media from doctors, nurses, and hospitals, Governor Dunleavy had a golden opportunity at a recent press conference on the Delta variant surge in Alaska to play the Y card. He had the opportunity to suggest Alaskans get vaccinated, that they wear a mask, that businesses promote mask mandates, that his administration is creating a plan to boost vaccinations. Or hell, at least he could have told Alaskans to stop taking deworming medicine made for livestock. But no, Governor Dunleavy's only suggestion in a state that lags behind in vaccination rates was to encourage Alaskans to, quote, talk to their doctors. Now let's stop right here. Governor Dunleavy said this in a press conference as he was flanked by his chief medical officer, who has spent the better part of her summer traveling the state practically begging Alaskans to get vaccinated. His chief medical officer, who for the last 2 weeks has been posting urgent messages to Alaskans about the rising cases, the severity, and the hospital capacity that's at risk. At a time when Alaska's public health needed a Y card, the governor played an X card. Why? Because Governor Mike Dunleavy's health experts are his base. And if his base wants to wait 15 deep in line at Kenai Feed and Supply to eat horse dewormer, who is he to question? It's the high wire act that Dunleavy and Bronson both are performing, trying to walk the fine line between continuing to stoke the rage and identity of the anti-vax, anti-mask crowd, while not appearing to totally abandon their moral obligation to public health during a pandemic. Now let's take a look at Bronson. Let's take a look at the cards he's been dealing. Nominating a controversial public health director. X card. Nominating a controversial head librarian. X card. Nominating an even more controversial head librarian. X card. Hiring a controversial consultant to pimp his shelter idea to the public. X card. Nominating two controversial anti-vaxxers and anti-maskers to the Public Health Advisory Board during a pandemic. X card. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, I can't find a single instance on a single critical issue that either Bronson or Dunleavy has not played an X card. Ladies and gentlemen, patterns of behavior. Satisfying their base at the risk of everything else, including public health and public finances. The Delta variant is real. The overcrowding at hospitals is real. The threat to both public health and the recovery of the economy is real. Both Dunleavy and Bronson, with regards to their continued undermining of public health, should be aware of their uneasy political relationship to COVID. Seriously, this pandemic kept Dunleavy in office. If not for COVID, he'd be out of a job. Meanwhile, the pandemic swept Bronson into office at a time it looked like it was receding and Anchorage residents were ready to get back to normal. Now, for both politicians, the Delta variant is playing its own X card. Today, with things getting progressively worse from the capacity of hospitals to the capacity of local businesses simply to stay open due to the resurgence of the virus, I personally sense Dunleavy and Bronson's shotgun political relationship with COVID is about to become the worm that finally turns. A virus that has, in some degrees, been politically rewarding for both of them is now playing the X card, and both of them have nothing to answer with. Why? Because unless Dunleavy and Bronson are willing to tell their supporters that the horse dewormer they're taking doesn't work and encourage all Alaskans to get vaccinated, the Delta variant will continue to hold all the X cards. To wrap up, there is an important lesson here for both the Alaska State Legislature and the Anchorage Assembly. A Y card player cannot play a game with those who only know how to play the X card. The legislature and assembly should recognize this as a pattern of behavior from Dunleavy and Bronson and anticipate responding to a lot of X cards. Meanwhile, I think the big question for all of us is how bad does the Delta variant's effect on the health and well-being of Alaskans need to deteriorate before either Governor Dunleavy or Mayor Bronson reacts to stem the surge? Ladies and gentlemen, I suggest not to hold your breath. I also suggest to you that their handling of the Delta variant will eventually be their political undoing.
And now, let's talk about life.
All right, let's talk some life. With Labor Day approaching, we answer the age-old-fashioned question on today's With All Due Respect episode, should you wear white after Labor Day? And to address this critical fashion dilemma, I've invited the fashionista of this podcast, Maya Nolan Partnow, to join us and give us her thoughts. In the late 19th century, the society ladies were engaged in an invisible battle with the nouveau riche. The rule of you can't wear white after Labor Day was created to separate the old money elitist from the new money group. For those who had money and could leave the city during the warmer months, white was considered vacation attire. However, the real reason could be much simpler. After Labor Day became a federal holiday in 1894, it came to mark the end of summer. Vacationers then packed away their breezy white dresses and linen button-downs in favor of darker-hued clothing like navy suits and gray sweaters. It was a demarcation point for fashion. People were back in the city, back at school, and back with a different wardrobe. Regardless, in the 21st century, you most certainly can wear white after Labor Day. In fact, the host of this podcast is a firm believer in winter whites. White is a stunning winter color, just like a fresh blanket of snow. It can portray different styles as it is truly timeless. It makes the wearer look elegant and formal without being overbearing. Think Fonzie's bright white t-shirt under his black leather jacket, or James Dean's bright white t-shirt under his red cotton jacket. Think Marilyn Monroe in the movie The Seven-Year Itch when Monroe's white dress blew suggestively above her knees over the subway grate. Or, of course, Sharon Stone in her white dress during the most paused scene ever during the movie Basic Instinct. My favorite piece of white clothing that has ever adorned my closet was a pair of white corduroy pants I bought in the 8th grade for back to school. When everyone zigged that year by wearing white cargo pants, I zagged by wearing white cords. And for the record, back in my day, the first day of school was always after Labor Day. White is a classic, and classics cannot be contained by the month of the year. It's my strongest fashion opinion that white is completely fashionable after Labor Day. And now, let's check in with Maya on her thoughts.
Fun fact, no white after Labor Day is a rule that was quietly made up by the women of America's aristocratic families to differentiate between classy old money and the gauche pretenders of the nouveau riche. It eventually got picked up by the middle class, and now here we are talking about it on a podcast based in Anchorage, Alaska, a place where literally no one is old money. It is trickle-down snobbery. You know who wore white after Labor Day and any other time she darn well pleased? Coco Chanel. So if you think you know more about fashion than the woman who literally revolutionized 20th century style, and if you want to let a bunch of long-dead East Coast heiresses tell you how to get dressed, well then by all means, pack up your whites this weekend. For the rest of us, there's only one time that it's absolutely never okay to wear white, and that is at somebody else's wedding. Perhaps my greatest achievement in adulting was July 2017 when I wore the perfect pair of ripped white jeans to a Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers concert, riding my bike both ways, kept them perfectly clean.
And now, entertainment.
In entertainment today, I want to share an entertainment selection that I believe, if you are listening to this podcast, if you are listening to the sound of my voice, you obviously appreciate political insight. Then, my friends, you will appreciate this documentary. The documentary is called Q, Into the Storm. This is a six-part documentary series from director Cullen Hoback, which charts an incredible journey to uncover the forces behind QAnon. This documentary spans 3 years in the making, and it traverses the globe. The series follows the director as he investigates the movement fueled by conspiracy theories that has grown in scope and political significance. He chronicles its evolution in real time, revealing how Q uses information warfare to game the internet, hijack politics, and manipulate people's thinking. Ladies and gentlemen, this was one of the best documentaries I have ever seen. Before I sat down to watch this documentary, I knew only two things about the entire QAnon world. Number one, it was someone or some group responsible for creating crazy conspiracy theories. And number two, a lot of smart people I knew were buying into those crazy conspiracy theories. What made this documentary so incredible is instead of spending time trying to debate the whole QAnon movement, the director pulled back the curtain to reveal who is actually behind the entire Q movement. And what was even more incredible was this documentary began taping years before Q exploded into the public view, so you can actually witness the critical moments unfold in this very bizarre story. And just like when you saw The Wizard of Oz for the first time when you were a child, when the director pulls back the curtain, you will fall out of your seat. It will seriously make you question how gullible some Americans are, how easily manipulated some Americans are, and how easily driven to violence against their own country some Americans are. Even in the off chance you've never heard anything about QAnon, you need to watch this documentary. Again, the documentary is called Q Into the Storm. There are 6 episodes to the documentary, and they are available on demand at Amazon Prime and HBO Max. Trust me, you need to see this. Politics. In closing comments, it's important when policymakers talk about the future of Alaska's economy, they're truthful. Today, with a raging debate over how high the dividends should be and how Alaskans will pay for the budget deficits caused by those high dividends, some policymakers continue to point to the potential developments in NPRA to try and assuage fears about future oil production. The Natural Petroleum Reserve in Alaska, the NPRA, is an area of land on the North Slope and is owned by the federal government. In 2008, it was estimated that the NPRA contains approximately 896 million barrels of conventional undiscovered oil. For years, you have heard the great potential for development activity in the NPRA. It is considered to be Alaska's next big hope. In fact, I have heard more than one policymaker point to the potential of NPRA as to why the future is so bright, Alaskans need not worry about finding new revenue sources. I can hear them. It's just around the corner, another 4 decades of big dividends and no new taxes. That's the echo from the big dividend crowd. Well, let's take a look beneath the hood. Because NPRA is federal land and not state land, the effects on the permanent fund and the state budget revenue picture will be negligible. Oil companies are still going to have to pay all of the array of taxes they currently pay, property taxes, production taxes, corporate income taxes, but Alaska will get pennies on the dollar for royalties. Because NPRA is federal land, the feds get 50% of the total royalty and the remainder is distributed back to Alaska, but those funds must follow a strict distribution formula. Recently, the NPRA royalties generated about $18 million. The rule calls for the balance to be distributed to the NPRA-affected communities for public infrastructure or community projects. So, by the time the residual royalty is distributed between North Slope property taxes, community grants, very little of that $18 million is left. Even if there is any money left on the table, NPRA royalties must be distributed in the following manner. Half go to the principal of the permanent fund, one half goes to the public school fund, and only then would the remainder go into the general fund. So unlike state-owned land, where the state gets 100% of everything from production of a barrel of oil, including royalties, in NPRA, which is federal land, the economic gains are going to be much less, and what's left is heavily regulated on how it can be spent. While NPRA remains to be Alaska's next big North Slope development hope, we need to recognize it's not Alaska's next big revenue hope. So when you hear policymakers point to NPRA development as proof there is no need for action on a fiscal plan, just remember, NPRA stands for Not Prudo Revenue At All. And there is the music, ladies and gentlemen, and you know what that means. Please remember our podcasts are new every Thursday. You can subscribe to them on your favorite podcast platform or catch them on the Anchorage Daily News website. Van, how about throwing us your website details?
Thanks, Andrew. Yeah, if you visit abodabobrand.com, that's abodabobrand.com, you can see a little bit more about what I do and touch base with me.
That is our time, ladies and gentlemen, and we thank you for yours.